All right. You know what day it is, and you know what time it is. That's right. It's Tuesday. It's midnight on the East Coast, and it's 9 o'clock on the West Coast, and it's 6 o'clock here on the beautiful Big Island. And let me tell you something. You know what day it is, what time it is, and you know what show it is. It's the Inside Hour with your host, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, and co-host, Reverend Roxy. And we have guests tonight. But before I introduce the guests, you know what I have to do. I have to give it up to the Creator. As you open your eyes, let life be the glow. As you open your nose, let life be the scent. And as you open your hands, let life be the flesh. Layer after layer after layer. I want to hope, I have faith that you all had the most best day ever and that you are ready to go within to explore. Now, before we put our guests on, I'm going to give it up to Dr. Len, because Dr. Len is waiting to talk to you. You know he's on the road. You know he's traveling. He's here or there. Dr. Len, are you there?
Yes, hi, Reverend Roxy.
Hello?
Yes, hi there.
Great pleasure. We're having problems.
I can hear you, sweetie.
Okay, go ahead and talk to the audience there.
Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. I'm Dr. Len Horowitz. This is the Inside Hour. I want to thank our sponsors, tetrahedron.org. I want to thank Healthy World Distributing for all the support they've given us all over these years. We've been coming out with some awesome information. There's the new book, Love the Real Da Vinci Code, the new DVD, The Love Code. If you haven't seen the website, lovetherealdavincicode.com. That's lovetherealdavincicode.com. Go to that website. Read the information that's on it. Read the newsletter that's attached to it, as well as listen to the introduction to the Love Code DVD that is linked therein. The book is available for free download. Get it, read it, because it will change your whole view and perspective on reality, as well as your important, virtually divine role as a co-creator, a powerful co-creator, to recreate not just yourself in the image of the Creator, but this entire planet, which is in need of restoration, and literally a whole change in the paradigm to sustain us instead of condemn us. So the reality is that we've gotten some fabulous information. There's a lot of free information on the internet. I want to thank our co-sponsors for supporting us and to deliver this information to you. I've gotten a lot of emails. I was on Coast to Coast with George Norrie the other night dealing with the tuberculosis skin testing scam in the Hawaiian Islands. In fact, there's a great movie out called The Constant Gardener. If you get that wonderful Hollywood production, or it's actually an independent film organization that produced it, The Constant Gardener, and you watch that film, you'll understand that what is taking place in Africa with the collusion between the pharmaceutical industrialists and the government officials in high-ranking positions, that you will learn that they are taking advantage of humanity's ignorance and causing lots of infants and children through vaccinations and tuberculosis skin testing to be damaged. Now, I know that that's controversial, and I know that a lot of people don't believe that, but I'm happy to share with you the evidence that we've been compiling over all these years that shows that this movie, The Constant Gardener, is the exact thing that's taking place on the Big Island of Hawaii, on the Hawaiian Islands in general, where tuberculosis skin testing of low-risk children, which is a contraindicated public health procedure, that that's a policy that violates common sense even, and that there's no good evidence whatsoever that would support this entire project. That was the subject of my coast-to-coast interview with George Norrie, and we've gotten an avalanche of requests for more information as a result of last Wednesday night's broadcast. So I want to thank George Norrie. I want to thank the coast-to-coast folks for putting that information out there. And I want to respond, if I could, this evening. If Reverend Roxy, I think you have a guest on, so I don't want to undermine anything that you had planned for this evening, but we have an onslaught of questions that have come from the listeners of the program. In essence, Coast to Coast is heard by approximately 7 million people every night. They're late night's largest radio talk show, and George Norrie is the best of the best that conducts it, and we had a tremendous response. There's lots of questions, so I'd like to eventually at least get to those questions. Many, many of them have to do with health issues, critical issues that are affecting not simply children, but adults, the elderly, and at some point in time I would like to spend some time addressing those.
Well, so, you know, Dr. Lynn, that tonight's show is going to begin to open everybody's eyes up to a lot of the things, because if we're talking about compounding problems, definitely we have a can of worms we're going to be opening up tonight to enlighten people and give them some insight on what's really going on in the health world.
Well, let's do that. Why don't you go ahead, move ahead with the show that you had planned.
Thank you, Dr. Lynn. You listen in. Get on your computer if you can, and I'm going to bring my guests on. I miss you.
I miss you, too.
See you later. Bye. All right. Dr. Pang, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. And Lorraine, are you here?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, then what I would like to do is I would like to bring on my two guests, and you are listening to the Inside Hour, and this is bbsradio.com. Tonight we're going to have a twofold kind of a discussion tonight. I am so fortunate to be sitting next to one of the premier workers that are working hard. One of the prophets is working hard, a whistleblower, as a matter of fact, when it comes to this thing called radiation. And on the other side, I have a citizen who is, we're talking heady. If there's anybody out there that has antagonistic skepticism about the issues we're getting ready to talk about, I think by the time you finish, and I'm going to be sitting out, I may ask a question, but I want these two people to give you some insight on two subjects. I gathered these two people together. I saw them speak at a tea house in Hilo, and I said, oh, my goodness, God has put me in the right place. I need to get their information out. So without further ado, I would like for you, Dr. Pang, to introduce yourself to the audience and tell them who you are and what your cause is, you see. I'm going to let you take it away, and then I'm going to put your good friend on here that will begin to talk. And what I'm looking for here is a conversation about two issues. One of them is depleted uranium, and the other one is GMOs. Now, we've got about 40 minutes. And I'm hoping that by the time you two finish, my goodness, we will have the insight that we need. So everybody, get your pencils, get your paper, take some notes, take notes. You know, if they throw a .com at you or anything like that, take a note and go for it. Dr. Pang, tell these people who you are.
Okay. My name is Lauren Pang. I'm a physician. I have a medical degree from Tulane University. I have a master's in public health from Tulane University. I'm boarded in preventive medicine. I have 60 publications in peer-reviewed medical journals. I was born and raised in Honolulu. I have a chemistry degree with honors from Princeton University. I've been a consultant for the World Health Organization since 1985. I'm retired from the U.S. Army Walter Reed Institute of Research after 25 years with them. My work was in tropical diseases, developing drugs, vaccines, and diagnostics. In 1987, I got the Research and Development Award from the U.S. Army for work in malaria. Last year, I was elected or chosen as one of America's best doctors. It goes to 3% of the doctors, and I think we'll just leave it at that. Do you want to bring up the topic or to introduce myself or introduce the topic briefly?
Please.
Okay. I guess you chose the two topics tonight is depleted uranium. When we get into it and discuss it, I think there's no question how dangerous depleted uranium is, especially the inhaled form, which has been neglected. The only question is how widespread is it? How much do we have in the atmosphere? The other topic, GMOs, genetically modified organisms, also called GE, genetic engineering. This one we know is quite widespread. We plant the plants all over the place. It's still an issue, according to the World Health Organization position, how safe or how dangerous it is. The official position by the World Health Organization is that it is unknown. We do not know harmful effects, and we do not know safety. We don't know anything. It is unknown. Now, the industry will tell you we cannot show harm, They will tell you and twist the term to being, we have shown no harm. We have shown no harm is very different than we have not shown harm. We have not shown harm. We have not shown safety. Let's just leave it at the fact that these things are unknown. I come from a medical background. We have seen what the analogous GE products do in humans. When we do gene therapy, which is as close as we can get to GE products, we have seen high rates of cancer and very strange, bizarre, unpredictable side effects. So I'll just leave it at that for now.
All right. And we also have now on the line, you're a very good, I guess I don't want to use the word warrior, but when I look at you two, I see samurai all over you. you know that you're going to get to the truth with your sword and just cut it up for people. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell everybody who you are?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Dr. Pang for all of his work advocating for citizens. He is a citizen scientist and medical expert. We're very, very, very lucky to have him advocating on behalf of public health. He's a real public health official. And my background is the geosciences. I have did my PhD research in atmospheric dust. And I have a particularly excellent background, which is interdisciplinary, in order to understand radiation and how it cycles and recycles through the environment. But this also concerns the transport of pollen, and in particular this evening, the pollen from GM plants. And the pollen and the radiation are carried in atmospheric dust, which travels around the world. And we know that depleted uranium nanoparticles, which are very, very tiny, tenth of a micron and smaller in diameter, they're actually much smaller than pollen. But these are transported, the depleted uranium particles, within 7 to 9 days, they're transported by atmospheric processes from Iraq, Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, and have been measured in the British atmosphere from 1991 to the present. And they've been measured and reported from the Aldermaston Nuclear Weapons Facility in England. It's an official British government laboratory, and these are official British government monitoring stations. So there's no doubt about the credibility or the veracity of the information. I also have worked in two nuclear weapons laboratories in the U.S., the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, where the Manhattan Project started. And under the Manhattan Project, atomic bombs, depleted uranium, poison gas weaponry, and a defoliant like Agent Orange were all developed during World War II. However, the Agent Orange weapon and depleted uranium were thought to be too horrific to use on a civilian population, but that atomic bombs dropped on the populations of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, who were primarily civilians, were more acceptable. And after traveling to Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the year 2000, after I had become a whistleblower at Livermore in 1991, I learned the truth about the horrific effects of nuclear weapons. And in those peace museums in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I made the decision to dedicate the rest of my life to educating the public about nuclear technologies and the fact that we must abolish them. Nuclear weapons, nuclear power plants, and depleted uranium. And I really want to thank Dr. Pang, who testified in the Hawaiian legislature with me on March the 19th, 2007, and helped to support the passage of the first depleted uranium bill in the Hawaiian legislature. That is the 22nd depleted uranium bill introduced into state legislatures in the United States, and it's caused a tsunami of public opinion in Congress, in the three presidential administrations who covered up depleted uranium, and particularly in the Pentagon. So thank you so much, Dr. Pang, from not only the independent scientists and radiation specialists around the world who've struggled so long to expose the public health and environmental effects of radiation, but also for all of your help with the GMO issue, which is also extremely important and interacts synergistically with the effects of radiation, multiplying the effects of each other.
I forgot to say I speak as a private citizen, but in my day job, I'm the district health officer for Maui County. So I don't speak for them. They have their own opinions. Thank you.
Ha ha! That is very true. Thank you for saying that. You know, you are a doctor, and also a health officer. There is something that you are eventually going to have to react to and speak upon in terms of this issue of radiation, doctor. Can you explain to the people, for me and for posterity, why this idea of depleted uranium is a misnomer? What exactly are we dealing? Why is this stuff so dangerous?
Okay. The term is actually depleted uranium. Uranium is kind of a common element. You know, they used to hunt it out to use for fission reactors for the nuclear generators. Okay? Now, uranium has different isotopes, 234, 235, 238. And apparently 235 is really a good hot isotope. It makes a lot of fission in the nuclear reactor. So you want to get a high amount of that, you know, and when you concentrate it, so you get a lot of 235 and very little 238, that's what you want in your reactor. That's called enriched. And I guess sometimes you can get it to make a bomb if you want, but we're just looking at reactors. What's left over has a slightly higher proportion of 238, which is not so hot. And you get all this depleted uranium. It's got a lot of 238, or more 238 than enriched. Now, both uraniums still have radioactivity. Alpha particles, which are very heavy. Alpha particles and, you know, there's beta and gamma particles. We would like to talk about the alpha particles of uranium, either enriched, natural, or depleted. Alpha particles were never that important when it's kept external. The alpha particles are very heavy, but they can be blocked by your skin. The outer surface of your skin is dead, and it just blocks alpha particles. A sheet of paper can block alpha particles. So external to the body, alpha particles aren't so bad. External to the body, we worry about, say, gamma particles, which can really pierce. So all of a sudden, you know, we have depleted uranium being generated by the tons because we're generating enriched uranium. And now you've got depleted uranium just piling up in, it's kind of like parking lots and storage facilities and warehouses. And what are we going to do with it? Well, we could make doorstops. But the military discovered that uranium is very, very dense, the metal. And when fired at high velocity, it can pierce a tank, you know, armor, and explode and ignite on impact and burn violently, almost to the point of an explosion. Now, that's from a geek point of view. That's real cool. You don't have to put an explosive warhead. All you have to do is shoot a rod of uranium, depleted uranium, at high enough speed, and it will explode. The problem with this, they used it in the Balkans. I saw it first demonstrated in 1982 when I was on a little mission to Egypt. And they use it in the Balkans. They use it in the first Gulf War. And I guess they continue to use it piecemeal now. It's great for armor piercing. Sometimes armor has a layer of depleted uranium because it's so dense you're trying to protect yourself. But on impact, it burns. 50% of the stuff is volatilized, burned up in the air. It's released as molecular, you know, molecules of uranium. And molecules of uranium are heavy, but in a molecular form, they defy gravity, Brownian motion, the convection currents. They're carried around, like Lorraine says, from the Gulf to, say, England in 9 days on the jet streams. A chunk of uranium is heavy, but the molecular, individual molecular particles of uranium, the atoms, are not heavy. They also burn to oxides, uranium oxides, UO, UO2, U2O, you know, et cetera, U308. There's tons of oxides. Oxides just means burn. Burn means you oxidize them. There's something very special about the oxides. They can be breathed in, they bind to the lung, and they are not soluble. They are not excreted. It has been calculated that you retain your oxides for up to 70 years. So on these fumes and plumes, when we use this as weaponry, we breathe in these fumes and plumes of free uranium molecules and the oxides. The chemistry of uranium dictates how you breathe it in, where it binds to, how quickly it clears from the body. The chemistry is such that it doesn't clear from the body, at least for 70 years. So what's the problem? Tied to the uranium, there's still alpha particles. Internally, alpha radiation is the most dangerous form of radiation of all. You remember a sheet of paper can block it? But in your lung, there ain't no sheet of paper, and there are not no dead skin cells. It's right up close to your chromosomes. And if you knock out the genes, you're asking for mutations. In fact, if you look at genetically modified crops, you still with me?
Yeah, I'm with you. You're getting to it.
I'm going to cross topics. You look at genetically modified crops. There's a publication by the National Academy of Sciences, Institute of Medicine, and they tell you that genetically modified crops have the highest risk of significantly higher risk of unintended health effects compared to normal food. But what is the highest risk? Not GMO crops, radiated crops. Okay? Intentional radiation to knock out genes. Now I jump back to DU. So you breathe this stuff, it's up close and real close to your lung. From your lung, it was picked up by it. These are called the insoluble oxides. Some people call them the glass and ceramics, which is a chemical term for insoluble oxides. And they stay in your lung, but they're picked up by the macrophages. Little bitty insoluble particles are often encompassed by these macrophages. And the macrophages live in the lymph system, and they travel in your body to the lymph system, affecting all kinds of organs within the lymph system. The lymph system is not your blood system. It's a system distributed through your body everywhere. So that's why you can inhale it. It can be insoluble, but it can present as, you know, do you really want me to read this? This is according to National Academy of Science.
Well, it seems like we have to read it because they don't believe us. So
right, this is the National Academy of Science
reporting
about DU, the effects that we do not know if it has it. Now, believe me, if it doesn't have it, tested in animals, the National Academy of Science would tell you it doesn't cause it. They will tell you we don't know if it causes it or not because if we see these things in animals, but we haven't studied them in humans. Lymphatic cancer, bone cancer, nervous system diseases, non-malignant respiratory diseases, other health outcomes like gastrointestinal diseases, immune-mediated diseases, hematological, you know, blood diseases, reproductive, developmental dysfunction, genotoxic effects, those mutations, cardiovascular effects, hepatic disease, dermal effects, ocular effects, musculoskeletal effects. So those are the medical terms that we've seen in animal studies, the medical terms. What are you looking at now in Gulf War Syndrome? Now, Lorraine will give you reports of how much we see. But these guys coming out of the Gulf War, I'm sure they must have breathed some fumes, or at least the first Gulf War and the Balkans. They're reporting all kinds of symptoms, muscular symptoms, disorientation, nervous system, cardiovascular symptoms, sleep disorders, reproductive problems. Those are just the symptoms that match this huge list by the National Academy of Science put together from their animal studies. So to me, and a lot of international experts, Rosalie Bertel, she's kind of the leader, she is asking for a reevaluation of the Gulf War syndrome. This time, check to see if they have inhaled uranium, DU or uranium metal bits. The test for that is a 24-hour urine collection. It is not the spot test that the military does. The spot test is so insensitive, it will only pick up shrapnel. We are not talking about shrapnel. We're talking about inhaled uranium fumes and all the particles and chemicals that can be inhaled. Now, this bill we asked for simply asks to test Hawaii's target sites, the DART, to see if we have used uranium weaponry. In the Senate, when we went to fight this bill, our detractors, mostly the military, say that stuff we find in the dirt, that's low level. Yeah, I know it's low level, but finding uranium in the dirt is a marker that the plumes were released. The plumes are what's dangerous. It's almost like cigarettes. Cigarettes, yeah? Cigarettes by themselves are not dangerous, but when burned and inhaled, the fumes are dangerous. Furthermore, if I see some ashes from cigarettes on your office, I will tell you this ash is a marker that somebody lit and breathed in the smoke. The ash itself is not dangerous. So once again, when we sample for DU, or the remnants of big metal chunks or particles at the target zones in Hawaii, the military target zones, we're looking for a marker that volatile plumes were released. And we'll just stop there with DU. Lorraine.
Yeah, she's here. I'm here. Yes, what the military has hidden is the amount of depleted uranium they've actually used. 800 tons of depleted uranium was calculated by Professor Yagasaki from the Ryukyu University in Okinawa to be the atomicity equivalent, or the same number of radioactive atoms that would be released from 83,000 Nagasaki bombs. The military in Britain and in the United States has reluctantly admitted to using the 4,000 tons of depleted uranium weapons, which is the atomicity equivalent of 400,000 Nagasaki bombs. The Atomic Energy Agency for Britain warned the British government in 1990, just before the 1991 Gulf War, when depleted uranium was introduced to the battlefield by the U.S. for the first time, and the Atomic Energy Agency in Britain said that 50 tons of residual dust from depleted uranium weapons would cause about, I believe it was 500,000 new cancers. The amount of depleted uranium released in Iraq that the U.S. and British governments admitted to is enough to cause cancer in every person living in Iraq. This is clearly a depopulation policy. Now, what is even more alarming is that in 1 year, this radioactive dust and poison gas is distributed and mixed throughout the entire atmosphere of this planet. And we are now in an epidemic since 1991 of infant mortality, low birth weight babies, chronic fatigue syndrome, cancer, diabetes, The increases in diabetes globally are just horrendous since 1991, and many, many other chronic illnesses. After World War II, the medical disability rate in American veterans was 5%. After the Vietnam War, when Agent Orange was used, the medical disability rate was 10% in our veterans. But after since 1991, the medical disability rate in American veterans has been over 55%. The only thing that's new is depleted uranium, radioactive poison gas weaponry. The radiation acts synergistically with chemicals on the battlefield, and battlefields are very toxic places. Also with biological agents such as the vaccines, which were given to soldiers as many as 7 vaccines at one time, which does tremendous damage to the immune system. And we have many horrible increases in illnesses in our soldiers. I'm trying to get a...
Is this a conspiracy?
It sure is.
And is there an end to it? Is there something? I mean, Dr. Pang,
yes.
You must, as a medical doctor, be seeing people who are exhibiting some of these symptoms in terms of what you're talking about, whether it be GMO or DU. How do you address it with your with people of authority over you? You know, you're working for somebody, you're working for us in the state or whatever. But how are you going to address this this idea of knowing that it's depleted uranium? Is this something that we can work with?
First of all, I don't know it's depleted uranium, but I'm willing to look. Like I said, we have to show the correlation of the, say, the veterans of the Gulf War or the civilians in those areas. You have to show the correlation of their illness with a better test for detecting DU in their urine. Now the military will tell you, oh, we know the test. The test doesn't show any difference. Believe me, I read the report. The data was, it wasn't fudge, but when you do small numbers, like 8 versus 16, you're not going to show any difference. The absolute numbers seem to show a difference, but statistically it wasn't that different. But I mean, I wish people would quit playing statistical tricks with the numbers that are staring you in the face. Now, also, that's not my opinion. That's a lot of international experts. How do I deal with this? I would like to look fairly, validly, openly, transparently at the causes of all these things Lorraine was mentioning. And then, of course, there's a whole bunch more. Yeah? Severe asthma in girls, attention deficit disorder. Is that real or is that increased diagnosis? Blah, blah, blah. The honeybees, anything. You know, the honeybee problem. I don't know what it's caused by. Is it DU? Is it global warming? Is it GMOs? I don't know. The problem is we are not being allowed to look. And when we are allowed to look, the way, the method we use is so bizarre or mucked around with, it's called the fool's errand. That's how I got involved in this bill. The bill was supposed to look for contaminated target sites, but it was, I guess, designed so poorly so that you couldn't see it if it was there. I mean, I'm looking for valid, honest tests.
Oh, very well.
I will not tolerate retaliation. I don't care who I'm offending, but I am following federal guidelines. Now, there are federal guidelines. You know, remember, I'm retired Army. I'm retired Army. By the way, don't say Army people don't support it. I'm retired Army, 24 years. Okay. When I was working on this stuff, I was in charge of environmental and occupational things for, like, Johnston Island chemical burn-off. We were obliged to follow federal, state, host country, county guidelines, whichever was the most stringent. Okay? So if they pass this bill at state, well, I guess that's more stringent because we're asking for sampling, and I expect the military to follow and pay for it. Now, the military has told us, I don't know what they told us, that the nuclear agencies, the feds, are responsible. Okay, whatever. show me their guidelines. If their guidelines are not more stringent than what we are about to pass, assuming we don't get vetoed by the governor, then we follow the most stringent, period, the end. Okay? Now, I might be wrong, but there is to be no retaliation against people trying to follow federal guidelines, even if they're wrong.
Amen.
I hope I'm wrong,
Amen.
Because the consequence is too gross to believe. The consequence is, if this aerosolized uranium plume, which we seem to be detecting at greater and greater levels, is really this dangerous, what are you going to do? There's no way to clean it up. There's no way to treat. The best you can do is stop doing what you do, pray for lots of rain to bring it out of the atmosphere, onto your ground, maybe into your water table, but at least it's not inhaled. That's why...
Put an end to this, because we're going to get into that other favorite subject that we have, our doubts about GMO.
Well,
okay.
I'd just like to present the medical disabilities diagnosed in the veterans of the 2003 Iraq War. And this is basically the 631,174 veterans who served in Iraq in 2003. This is from a PowerPoint presentation that was presented in the Veterans Administration in August of 2006. The veterans had these diagnoses: muscular skeletal problems, 87,590 soldiers. Mental problems, 73,154 soldiers. Ill-defined conditions, 67,743 soldiers. Gastrointestinal, 63,002 personnel. Neural problems, and this is depleted uranium plus the pesticides, because the soldiers have to wear flea collars around their necks. 61,524 soldiers. Endocrine, nutritional, metabolic, 36,409. Respiratory, 36,190. Poisoning, 35,765. Circulatory, cardiovascular, 29,249. Dermatitis, which is basically heavy metal allergies to DU, 29,010. Kidney, urinary, 18,886. Benign and malignant neoplasms, that's cancer, that's 8,000. And blood problems, 3,591. Clearly, there is a severe medical crisis in our soldiers since 1991. And not only that, they come home, they have DU in their semen, they internally contaminate their wives and partners. They're having babies born with severe birth defects that look just like the Iraqi and Afghan babies. And the uranium leaks out in their sweat from their bodies, contaminates their homes, and the healthy children who were born before the Iraq War. We have a very, very serious medical crisis in our soldiers, but we also have a global medical crisis from the global contamination and pollution of the entire atmosphere. There's no hiding it now. It's in all the government data from countries all over the world.
Now y'all understand what Dr. Lynn has been talking about, and now you hear it from Dr. Pang and Lynn, and I'm telling you now, folks, we're going to switch gears. This is Inside Hour. This is BBSRadio.com. And you're listening to your host, Dr. Len Horowitz, is probably listening in and wanting to jump in on this, but he's sitting back, and we're going to have him back next week regularly again. I miss him so. We're going to now get to the GMO side of this conversation, because now that they've gone to Iraq and they've been exposed to depleted uranium, all of these veterans and all of us come back to the serious situation compounded by all foods that we eat. Dr. Pang, can you give our listeners a short rundown on why and how we come to have this thing called genetic modified foods?
Okay.
Organisms.
Let's just start real basic. We're made up of genes. We just sequenced the human genes. Now, anybody who tells you we know all about it just because we sequence it, they're wrong. We've discovered many, many strange things when we sequence the human gene. For example, 98% of all your genes are silent at any one time. They're not expressing. Maybe they express when you're 3 years old. Maybe they will express when you're 75 years old. Maybe they won't express at all. A lot of the genes are called oncogenes. They will cause cancer. And you thank God they're quiet, at least for now. So that's interesting. 98% are silent at any one time. The next thing we notice is that we share a lot and lots and lots of genes. I have genes common with malaria parasites. I have genes common with worms. I have genes common with plants and monkeys and all kinds of things. How did we share these genes? Did our ancestors have sex? You know, did my amoebic ancestor have sex with a mosquito amoebic ancestor? Nope. The genes are traded freely by viruses and microbes. When you get, viruses are famous for getting into the cell, tearing off chunks of genes, taking them, infecting other species, and transferring the gene. If the gene is useful, like all the ones in mine that I borrow from worms and malaria and chimps and plants, hey, they're useful. I like it. If they're not useful over the millions of years of evolution, the not useful ones cause those lines of humans to die out. So you paid the price. Okay, I'm telling you this because people who genetically modify crops say mutations are happening every day. Yeah, they're happening every day, but it took millions of years and lots of deaths in my ancestors to leave me with a set that I have now that behaves correctly, quiet at the right times, and belong in certain spots. For example, my trisomy 21, the genes for mongolism, in a certain location, and it does and behaves what it's supposed to do. The other thing, strange thing we notice about genes, we used to think one gene makes one protein, and the protein does whatever it does. Well, that's not true. We have, like, I think 33,000 genes making 100,000 proteins, and those don't include the silent ones. So I'm trying to tell you, we know just enough about genes now to be very, very dangerous. The medical people know this, okay? There's one kid, well, there was a kid who was missing an essential gene, so all I wanted to do was transfer a gene that he's missing from human to human. Why transfer the gene if it's going to be silent? We stuck it with something called a promoter, which is an on switch. On switch borrowed from viruses, because viruses always turn themselves on. Well, when we transferred the gene, lo and behold, the kid died of leukemia. Now, I don't even know if the gene transfer was correct. It was for a immune deficiency. But anyway, he died of cancer, and it wasn't just dumb luck hitting an oncogene for cancer. It was four times the rate of there was a propensity to the cancer genes. This was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So all the docs have lots of precautions about messing and transferring genes back and forth. Well, lo and behold, I found out like 5 years ago, the plant guys are doing it left and right, transferring genes, taking it from fish, putting it in it, the tomatoes, taking it from humans, putting it into sugar cane. Well, that's okay. I mean, I guess so. If you transfer it and it turns on the wrong thing, or you transfer it and it deletes, it sits on top of an essential gene, or it transfers farther and farther from the sugar cane to the tomato, from the sugar cane to the virus, from that virus to a chestnut or whatever it is, well, that's all the plant world. That's not my problem. I'm a health guy, except for one thing. They have now shown that some of these mutations transfer from our food into our gut bacteria. And from that step is just a little step from the gut bacteria to me. Remember, microbes, bacteria, and viruses cross between species. And this is what they call horizontal gene transfer. They have also showed, not published yet, that on first feeding of a GE food to a rat, the mutations went into the rat's stomach after 2 hours, and in 6 hours it was in the rat's lymph nodes, in the rat. Then they followed it up with test tube experiments where they cultured human cells, intestine and all, and showed that it can transfer from the plant, mutations can transfer from GE plant into the human cells in test tubes. Now, believe me, if you transfer some of these genes, all of a sudden my genes are producing whatever you put in the plant. Well, that's not good, but I'm not that worried about it. I'm afraid of the promoters. You cannot randomly blast human cells with promoters expecting that you won't hit an oncogene, that you won't turn on those 98% that should be silent. We really don't know what we're doing. All I ask is that these things are treated like drugs and vaccines. If you're going to make them, test them in humans. Show me in humans the safety. Well, that hasn't been done. I sat down with Monsanto and there's no test. The animal tests that have been done, they are worrisome enough so that I told you the National Academy of Science says that the unintended health risk of GE crop food is significantly greater than normal crosses. That's just their opinion. There's no human data, but it's National Academy of Science based on lab and animal data. Now, if you read the newspapers, Hawaii newspapers, you will tell somebody who's pro-GMO, you notice they all have conflict of interest, right? They either work for the company or they were working for the company or they hope to work for the company, including the federal regulators. That's what they call the revolving door. You can see it in this movie, Future of Foods. Also, I think Big Island will soon show the local version, Hawaii version of Future of Foods. It's called Islands at Risk. Anyway, stand by for that. There's conflict of interest, okay? This is published in the New England Journal of Medicine, our medical thing. In our drugs, we have people working for the company who used to muscle the FDA to make strange recommendations. And it all came out in a Senate hearing published in 2005, series after series, conflict of interest. Our regulatory agencies have conflict of interest, period, okay? At least for drugs. Now, we know this is true in USDA and GE crops. All I'm telling you is when the person says it's safe, I know it's safe. First, ask them their conflict of interest, okay? I have none. I don't hold stock in organic products. I haven't written a book against GMOs that I'm trying to endorse. I have none. So at least, you know, I don't have that. But remember, conflict of interest trumps science. So all my credentials I gave you, it means nothing if I have a conflict of interest. This was shown and published in the New England Journal of Medicine. They took our senior scientists working for the FDA. The FDA has blessed GMO foods. They claim it's equivalent to non-GMO foods. But funny, the National Academy of Science has a differing opinion. So why did the FDA get to say this? Well, let's see. The FDA had an inquiry, and before the Senate, they said they were muscled and pressured by industry. They live in a state of fear of losing their jobs if they don't conform. The head of the FDA, Lester Crawford, he resigned. Hillary Clinton criticized him horribly as he resigned for conflict of interest. After he resigned, he was investigated for criminal improprieties, financial. He admitted guilt. So he wasn't disclosing some of his financial ties. And one of them was a GE company. That's Lester Crawford. That's the head of our FDA, and the FDA, our head of our FDA, we remain headless while we look for a substitute. So that's all we used to say until a year ago. A year ago, what's new? What's new? Rice, GE rice. You know, in several years ago, I think 1998, 99, and 2000, we planted experimental genetically engineered rice, long grain rice or short grain. I can't remember, one of the grains. And it was experimental, not for commercial use, and we withdrew it from the market after 3 years. And all of a sudden, 7 years later, like now, they discovered in the food supply in the southern states, all their rice is contaminated, all of it. Europe doesn't want GE rice, and they blocked it. So the farmers sued, and they're suing the company, and they're suing the USDA, and there's a fight in court for this contamination, which nobody knows how it occurred. And Bayer, the company that makes the rice, claimed act of God. Act of God is when you see a hurricane or a tornado or a tsunami, and you know what it is, and you say act of God. You don't know how the rice got contaminated. You don't know if it's bees. You don't know if it's wind. You don't know how often it got contaminated. You don't know if it's laboratory contamination, or was it the field? But they claim act of God. The saddest thing of all, when we saw that one strain contaminate, you look again, and it's actually two restricted strains of rice that got contaminated. Okay? So now the Hawaiians, trying to protect their taro in their taro bill, are very afraid of GE taro. Taro is sacred to them. Sacred or not to them, if it does contaminate taro, I'll never give it a clean bill of health till I see the human studies. And I want to see human studies before I say anything is safe. The industry will tell you, gosh, we've eaten thousands of meals of GE corn. We haven't seen anything. Really? You haven't seen anything? Because you haven't looked. How long were we smoking before we saw cancer? Well, at least 60, 70 years. How long did we use asbestos before we saw cancer? Decades.
Dr. Pang.
Yes.
I have come to the end of my time. I could go on forever. I want to have you back. I have to stop you. You are so informative. I don't have much time. I know Don Newsom, my director, is probably wishing I hadn't said that because he probably would give me more time, but I have got to just... You blow my mind, and I know you've blown the inside our people's minds.
I was just going to say, take all the time you need. I'm loving every minute of this.
And I want to thank you for coming and lending your beautiful mind to this issue. And I want you to tell everybody where to... So I'm sorry I interrupted you, but could you finish your thought? Because I want you to get to that part about how we're all eating this stuff. You know what I'm saying? How we're eating it, and now we've got the DU, and we're genetic wrecks.
Yes, there's just so many insults to our society and so many bad things that are occurring. I can't figure out what's what. And on Maui, we're about to have a meeting of global warmers, GMO, DU, and chemtrails, and we're going to list side by side all these insults we're seeing. And I don't know if we'll ever piece together what's causing what or what combo is causing what. But anyway, there's lots of stuff going on. But getting back to your bit, you know,
mm-hmm.
the Hawaiians are very upset because there's a bill to allow genetic engineering of taro. They don't want it in the field because the rice seems to have contaminated from the field. They don't want it in the lab. Well, I thought everything's contained in the lab. Well, let's see. Anthrax. You remember anthrax in the mailroom in the Senate? That came from a lab. Guaranteed, that's no natural strain. So a high-priority thing like anthrax, high security, high lab, it still gets out. Okay, that was mischief or maliciousness. But can these things escape from the lab maliciously or not? They sure can. I mean, so I don't like, I mean, until you guarantee me lab safety and field safety, I don't want to see these things. The thing that really upsets me the most, the people who are for GE, now, they have a conflict of interest and, you know, whatever. They'll tell you it's going to save the world and all that. That's fine. I want to see tests in humans. But they will point to insulin and vaccines. Look, I just published on a vaccine, hepatitis B. That's genetically engineered. I know vaccines. I test genetically engineered vaccines or insulin. And they say, hey, genetic engineering gave you insulin. You better be thankful. And we're about to give you GE plants. My friends, genetically engineered insulin or hepatitis B vaccine, which is wonderful, is not free-growing GE plants. Why isn't it? Because when you genetically engineer insulin, it's in contained vats in the lab. It never escapes. You genetically engineer bacteria. What else? When you give the insulin, you don't give the mutation and the promoter. You give the product, the protein. What else? When you give the insulin, it's not blowing on the wind to everybody downwind. It's targeted for the guys with diabetes. You know, it's targeted to those who need it. What else? Insulin is tested up the yazoos in humans before we actually give it, even genetically engineered insulin. What else? It's labeled. So someday, if the genetically engineered insulin is causing some weird effect, it's labeled, and I can figure out and I can recall it. This is not the same as GE plants. You're releasing life form, mutant, willy-nilly to people who need it or not, and it's not labeled. So even if it caused illness, remember sometimes it takes a long time to see illness, like asbestos and thalidomide and smoking? Even if it is labeled, you wouldn't see it. And I just kind of want to end at that. Now, a lot of people throw up their hands. GE corn, cotton, the big GEs, soy, corn, cotton, canola. It's all over. It's hopeless.
It's not hopeless. Those are four mutations. You got to see what's coming down the pipeline. There's even worse mutations. That's like saying, oh, God, we got some dangerous drugs out there. It's hopeless. Let the drug company release whatever they want. No. Worse stuff is coming that we need the public support to help control. Public support, remember, Hawaii does more GE field testing per acre than anywhere else in the world. We are number one. If you would like to help, we have a website. It's called Hawaii Seed. We used to be GMO Free Hawaii, but we changed the name to Hawaii Seed. It's a website. Get on the website. You can see how you can help. There's a post on all the different islands, and we try to coordinate this effort. So I just leave it at that.
Sounds good. Do you want to say something?
Oh, I just want to say that it's terribly important for the public to have scientists and medical experts who speak out and tell the truth and inform citizens about what is really happening. These horrific programs with horrific, indeterminate, unpredictable effects are happening behind a veil of secrecy. But by opening these issues up and talking about them in public, it is empowering citizens to fight back. We are fighting for our lives and for the genetic future of our children and grandchildren.
We are not against the future. People label us as anti-tech, anti-whatever. You remember, I just published in Vaccine about a GE vaccine. I'm not against technology in the future. I'm for better safety and better regulation on these things we have let loose, and that some are very difficult to recall. GE is our life form. DU is, gosh, it has a half-life of forever, and it seems to be in the air.
And it's what we're fighting is the misapplication of scientific technology. After all, the citizens have paid for the development of these technologies through their taxes, but they're being privatized and misapplied. For instance, Professor Ignacio Chapella from UC Berkeley came and gave a program which I organized with a friend in the city of Berkeley. And what he told us is that he had discovered that lab-altered corn pollen had been discovered to contaminate the wild corn in Mexico. This is where corn came from. It's where it originated. You never want to alter the wild strains of plants that we might need to go back to when the genetic engineering goes bad or haywire or gets off track. He also told us that genetic engineering companies are testing spermicidal corn in Mexico now. This kills the sperm of men in populations who eat it. This is for population control. Now, who has the right to decide whether you as an individual will reproduce or to decide to sterilize you? That's people playing God, and that isn't right. No one has the right to deny reproduction, the ability to reproduce to individuals.
Not only that, but if the spermicidal mutant gets out and crosses with regular corn, or goes through viruses and infects tomatoes, then it's, you know, sterility, willy-nilly, you know?
Yes, and it can be spermicidal papayas and spermicidal...
How are you going to recall it? You can't even recall Koki frog and fire ant, which you can see. This one you can't see, and it's a life form.
Once the genie's out of the bottle, there's no way to get it back. And if most of the species that are found... that were originally found on the Hawaiian Islands got here on air currents. Pollen can certainly leave here on air currents, and it will go all over the world.
I want to bring this home to the Big Island, because you guys are on the Big Island. I'm on Maui.
Yes.
Two and a half years ago, They tried to bring in an algae, genetically engineered to produce some very exotic drugs, human drugs. And we fought that in Kealakekua, Judge Strantz. We did litigation and we won just for these same reasons. One of those products it was bringing in is called monoclonal antibody. So the judge blocked it and we patted ourselves on the back. Within a year, there was a publication of a monoclonal genetically engineered antibody tested in the UK, in England, on 6 humans. This is correct. It wasn't blowing on the wind. It was tested in humans. Thank God it was tested in humans. This story was sensational. It made Maui news. A study of 6 guys in the UK made Maui news. They went absolutely bonkers. It was the most bizarre medical thing we have ever seen. They said their heads were going to explode. They tore off their clothes. They went into life support system. They all had to sign papers that someday they might die of premature cancer. One guy needs amputation. That product, oh, by the way, the industry says I'm making up lies. Check it out on Google, TGN Thomas Golf Nose 1412. The company did not admit it was GE. So the New Zealand government got the documentations and found that it was genetically engineered. Okay. Then the company said, must be a contaminant. But the German government went through the process of making it and said, well, contaminant or not, you made it to correct recipe. You remember this TGN 1412? It had cleared animal safety studies with flying colors. But in 6 out of 6 men, totally fantastic results. This is what was to be released in the Kona fields in algae, monoclonal antibodies. I wrote to Judge Trance and said, in retrospect, you did the right thing.
You know, on that note, because that is good news, that there are people out there that are using their reason, I'm going to bring this conversation to a close. I want to tell everybody that you've been listening to the Insight Hour. We have been listening to Dr. Pang, a citizen who is in a particular place where he can do the most good for mankind, and his eyes are open, and our ears are open, Dr. Pang. And let me tell you something. You are not preaching to the choir. You are preaching to the whole congregation, and we are behind you. So I want you to know that. I want you to know that she absolutely has a stalwart warrior in you, and I know that we will succeed and make the patient comfortable in the future by no more additions. We'll stop the epidemic of these man-made diseases, and we'll have you to tell us the man-made ones and the wild in the field ones, and we might just not overreact. Can you have one more little say here for yourself here, dear?
Oh, I just want to thank you, the alternative media, for covering these issues, and to just remind citizens that the alternative media is the media now. We can reach all over the world. We don't need the New York Times or the LA Times or the whatever Times to get our word out, and people like Dr. Pang are the real heroes today.
Dr. Helen Horowitz, Don Newsom of BBS Radio. Don, will you do me a favor? I wish everybody the best ever week. We'll be back Tuesday. You know the time, midnight New York, and it's going to be 9 o'clock in L.A., and it's going to be 7 o'clock on the Big Island. I'm Reverend Roxy. This is the Inside Hour. Aloha. Take me out, Don.